If it's creepy and it's freaky, it's on hashtag Creaky, a podcast about the paranormal and unexplained. And here are your hosts, Megan and Brooks.
Thank you, disembodied voice. Yes. Did you want to thank the disembodied voice?
I did. I want to thank the disembodied voice for that marvelous introduction.
Yes. He really knows what he's doing.
Yes. Professional.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Brooks.
And this is hashtag Creaky, paranormal podcast about the mysterious and unexplained. So it's been a while.
That it has.
Because we were too busy playing a scary game versus talking about scary stuff.
Yes, we have been pretty crazy into DayZ.
Yeah, the Xbox version. And yeah, that game really is creaky, I guess. Yeah. Is the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it was on the list of games to play for Halloween on my Twitch channel. And it's pretty much been the only game we've been playing, because it is crazy in depth and pretty, like, you get paranoid. It's scary.
Yeah, there's zombies. You hear the wind blowing. You hear creaks. Very creaky.
Yeah, very, very literally creaky.
Yes. But you guys, if you like, you know, our banter back and forth, you can always watch us play this game on Brooks's Twitch channel, which is twitch.tv/PhantomFox4.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And hear me get scared and think that a tree is a tent, or a tree is a person, or a tree is a bear.
It's usually a tree mistaken for something.
Yeah.
Except for that time I did show my wife the clip of you getting shot at and you freaking out over the mic and just yelling like, oh, help me, somebody help me.
That was not a tree.
Oh, it was not a tree shooting at you.
No. Mm-mm. So today I thought we would still keep it local, North Carolina, and talk about the Lawson family murders and some paranormal events that have happened since that. And Brooks, you're not familiar with the Lawson family murders, are you?
I am not, no.
So this took place in 1929, a long time ago. It happened in North Carolina. I'm trying to find exactly where. It was Stokes County, which actually isn't far from where I live now.
I'm pretty sure I've done some jobs there.
Right. And Charlie Lawson, who was the father, was married. And he had 7 kids. I want to make sure that I got it right. He murdered 6 of their 7 children, but I'll get into the whole story behind the murder. 2 weeks before the murder, he took his whole family into town, bought everyone new outfits, and had a family portrait taken, which I'll link to in the description so you all can see this family portrait, which was, in 1929, super uncommon for any tobacco farmer from Stokes County to do that, because one, it was very expensive. Most people made their clothes back then. 2, to get a picture taken was even more expensive, because again, 1929, not a lot of photographers, and the ones that there were, you know, charged a good amount of money. And then they had to pay for the print of the picture, which was again even more money. So, you know, it was kind of weird, but not so weird. I mean, he wanted a family picture. It was Christmas. Maybe this was his Christmas gift to his family. So most people didn't think anything of it. They were just like, you know, how does he afford this being a tobacco farmer? But whatever, maybe he saved his money and this is a big treat for his family. They were actually buried in the outfits that he bought them that day, just to kind of give even more creakiness to the story. Mm-hmm. It started on Christmas morning. Arthur Lawson, who was 16, let me give you an idea of the family and their ages. So Charlie was 43. His wife Fanny was 37. Then they had Marie, who was 17. Arthur, who was 16. Carrie, who was 12. Raymond, who was 2. Maybelle, who was 7. James, who was 4, and Mary Lou, who was the baby. She was just a few months old. She wasn't even 1 yet. So that's kind of a portrait of his family for you guys. Arthur Lawson, 16, went into town to buy shotgun shells because he thought that him and his dad were going rabbit hunting on Christmas afternoon, which was a local tradition for people in the area to go rabbit hunting on Christmas. While he was away, Charlie Lawson went to the tobacco barn and he shot and bludgeoned his two middle daughters, Carrie and Maybelle. Carrie, who was 12, and Maybelle, who was 7.
So he shot and bludgeoned them?
Shot and bludgeoned them. So he shot them close range with a shotgun and then bludgeoned them, I think with the shotgun itself. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were still alive and he, you know, hit their heads or what happened. Just awful. And then he went into the house and killed his wife, Fanny, who was sitting on the porch. Mary Lou, who's 4 months old, she was crying, so he went to her next. He, I believe, shot her. I'll make sure that I'm right in that. Then he went to the kitchen where he shot his 17-year-old daughter, Marie, who had just baked a Christmas cake. Then he sought out the two younger sons, James and Raymond, who had attempted to hide from him. But he did find them and he did shoot them. He positioned all of the bodies by putting pillows under their heads. He put rocks under the two girls that were in the barn's head. And he crossed their arms in a funeral pose. So the neighbors, they weren't alarmed by the gunshots because they thought, rabbit hunting, it's a tradition, not anything out of the ordinary.
And maybe he just got like a head start on it.
Right. And then when the relatives arrived to the Lawsons to say Merry Christmas, that's when they found the bodies and the cake. Some say that Charlie may have believed that Arthur would have tried to stop him, and that's why he sent him to the store to get the shotgun shells. If you look at the picture, you can see Arthur is bigger than him. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think Arthur probably could have stopped him. And then after the murders, Charlie hid in the woods, pacing around a tree while the police and neighbors were at the house. And then everyone heard the gunshot when Charlie took his own life. They found two notes in his pocket. One said, "Nobody to blame, but," and then that was the end. He didn't finish the note. And then the other one said, "Troubles can cause," and that was it. He didn't finish the note. Mm-hmm. So there have been lots of theories on why he did it. It's really hard to even think how a person could kill their whole family. They're called family annihilators. There's actually a term for them. I've been researching them because I watched the documentary on Chris Watts on Netflix, American Murderer, The Family Next Door, or A Family Next Door. Have you seen that?
I have not, no. And this is on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. It just came out the end of September. Have you heard of the Chris Watts story?
No, I haven't heard of that either.
Oh my gosh, do you live under a rock, Brooks?
I do. No. I mean,
this was in 2018 in Colorado. Chris Watts, his wife was missing and his two daughters. He even went on TV to like say, bring them home. I don't know where they're at. I remember watching him on TV and thinking he did it. I had just had KJ, so I was on maternity leave and that's all I was doing was watching TV. And I remember sitting in the bed, feeding KJ, watching it and thinking in my head, he did it. He's not crying. He's just like, he has his arms crossed and he's kind of going back and forth and pacing around when he's talking. But he did. He murdered his pregnant wife and his two daughters and then disposed of their bodies. And they called them family annihilators. And nobody knows why they do what they do. In the Chris Watts case, they believe it was because he was cheating on her and wanted a fresh start with this new woman. So he just got rid of his whole family.
That's extreme, though. That's like,
it's very extreme. Very There's a thing extreme. Called divorce. I don't know if he heard of that or not, but yeah. And the people that I've watched talk about this are psychologists, you know, people that study these types of murderers, and they all come back to the same thing, that these people are narcissists. They don't think about anybody else but themselves and what they can do to manipulate people so that they can get their way. So in Chris Watts' head, he was going to get away with it. because he had been getting away with the lies and everything else his whole life. In this case, in Charlie Lawson's case, I can only assume that he, you know, didn't really think he was going to get away with it since he killed himself. But there had to have been a reason why he wanted to kill his whole family before he killed himself.
It's always, anytime I hear something like that, it always puts me in mind of like the Amityville Horror.
Right. Freaky. And that's based on a true story, right?
Mm-hmm. Amityville Horror is based on a true story as well. Mm-hmm. I think they actually, it's like people who do that also blame paranormal things.
Yes.
Like that something has gotten to them and made them do these things.
Right. Either demons or, you know, like you said, paranormal, like ghosts. It could be hallucinations that they're thinking are paranormal things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the woman, I'm trying to remember her name. She drowned all of her kids in a bathtub. And she said it was a demon that told them that if she didn't do that, they were all going to go to hell. Just, okay. It's just crazy what your mind can do. But they, in fact, studied Charlie Lawson's brain and found no physical cause that could have made him go crazy. They did this because he had a terrible head injury like a few months before this all happened. So they thought maybe that head injury like flipped a switch in his head where he just wasn't right. But they studied it at Johns Hopkins and they didn't find anything abnormal about his brain. There were a few family members and friends that came forward and said that they believed that Marie, his oldest daughter, was pregnant and that it was Charlie's. So he got his daughter pregnant and he didn't want to deal with the shame that would be on the family. So he killed them all. Again, nobody knows. It's not proven that Marie was even pregnant. So we don't know. They did bury all of the family together, even Charlie. And it's in a Stokes County cemetery. I kind of want to go, maybe even like around Halloween.
Yeah.
And some people say when leaves fall, they fall on all of the graves except for Charlie's, like no leaves fall on it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting to see.
So the paranormal part to this all is that people actually go to where the house was. I don't believe it's still there. I think they had like a, almost like a museum. And people would actually go and the cake was still there and they would take like pieces of the cake as like, I don't know, some weird thing that I don't know why.
They would take a cake there or there'd be a cake there already?
There's like that cake that she baked, they left it there. And so like days and weeks after, nobody had went to the house to like clean it up. So people would actually go and as like a creepy souvenir, they would take a piece of the cake. Yeah, I'm not sure if that were
would they eat it or would they?
I don't know. I would assume there would be like blood on it because she just baked the cake and then he killed her with a shotgun, like in the kitchen with the cake there.
I wonder if anyone still has an old piece of cake.
It's weird.
That's odd.
They say though that you can hear Charlie like yelling for Arthur as if he was trying to find him to kill the last family member, like the paranormal activity around that. And I'm sorry if you can hear my son screaming in the background. Just adds to the creakiness of it. Oh no. But people will go and camp out there and several people have said that they've heard a man yelling, Arthur, Arthur, like in the woods, and that some people will hear like a faint shotgun sound as if it's Charlie reliving him killing himself. I don't know.
That kind of circles back to the, what we're talking about, Barry Hill.
Yes.
And the residual hauntings where things are like kind of playing over and over again. And you hear and see things happening.
Right.
Because they're like imprinted in time.
That, I mean, that explains that. And, you know, they're in the country too, so the shotgun sound isn't unheard of in North Carolina, in the country. But to hear him, Arthur, and then a few moments later hear the shotgun, that makes me think that that is residual, you know. Also, people have heard the baby crying. Just a random baby crying in the woods around the area that their house was. Again, that again could be residual. I mean, a baby hearing shotgun sounds definitely probably would cry. Just kind of creepy to just hear a random baby in the woods crying. I also hear that bobcats sound like babies crying sometimes.
That's true too.
So that, mean, could that could explain be, that.
Yeah, that could be misinterpreted as a child's cry.
Right. But again, these are the people that camp out looking for anything, trying to see if there is some paranormal activity. People say that when they go visit the grave, it's a, if it's at night, they will see the outline of a woman in a white dress just kind of wandering, and they'll look, and then they'll kind of look away and then look back, and she'll be gone. Like, it's a graveyard though, so it may be one of their spirits, may not, I don't know. Just kind of creepy that people are going to see the Lawson family graves and then they see this premonition.
Well, especially something so tragic in the way their lives were ended so abruptly.
Right, yeah. And
like, that's usually like a good recipe for hauntings in general.
I think, you know, being murdered too, you, that right there is unfinished business that you have. So I hear people can't cross over if they have things that are left undone, unsaid. I mean, to be so viciously murdered, I would assume you had some stuff that was not said.
I mean, he had the two unfinished notes in his pocket.
Right. What could it? What could they have meant? Like, who was to blame? You know. Troubles can cause what? You to murder your family.
And what? I mean, what kind of troubles?
Exactly. That goes back to the whole theory that his daughter was pregnant by him. It's just. There's also a picture of the coffins all lined up. It's so sad, but I will also share this in a link in the show notes below. So you can see the coffins and you can see the last family portrait that they took. It does look like Marie is pregnant in the picture. It really does. Just a few months along if she is pregnant, but you can definitely see, I don't know, like how her belly kind of comes out a little bit lower down. I'll send you this picture so you can see it.
Bit of a baby bump.
Yeah. And you can tell, you know, his wife is the older woman and then Marie is on the other side of him. And he just looks creepy. But his family, the Lawsons, are the namesake of Lawsonville, which is in Rockingham County. Mm-hmm. And that made me think, oh gosh, I've been to Lawsonville. That's, again, creepy. But do you see?
Here's a question as well. What happened to the son that... that survived?
That is a good question. I'm not really sure if he like went insane or whatever. Let me look him up really quick.
I mean, I would assume, I mean, how long would it take him to go get shotgun shells? She said the family was the one, I guess, like the rest of the family that were going to be like celebrating Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Came and found the bodies.
Yeah. He had to have come back and then saw that. Oh, he, all right. So He actually married and had children, but he died in a car accident in 1945. Mm. Yeah, that's sad. So 1945, if he was 16 in 1929, he was only in his 30s, 32, something like that. I'm not good at math. I didn't know there would be a test. That's tragic. Like, it's just, he survived this. Well, it didn't really survive. He wasn't there, and he was the only survivor. And then he dies, you know, as a young man with children. I wonder where he died at, and if there's anything paranormal that may have been maybe happening there too. And that tobacco barn where he killed his daughters, I'm curious if there's any paranormal activity around that area. I kind of just want to go just to see where it all happened. I don't know about stay the night, but see if there's anything that we experience, take your equipment, see what we can find on these, the Lawson family.
I think if possible, a full on camping trip would be pretty intriguing. I mean, we're actually going camping this weekend, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be doing some tests with my the spirit box, mm-hmm. and the EMP detector.
So are you going to an area that has been known for paranormal activity?
We're actually, yes, and around somewhere around where we're camping at, we'll probably have to end up driving to it, but there's supposed to be some like location of like a graveyard or something like that that has a lot of high activity.
Ooh.
So I'm going to do some additional research, and then of course if I find anything or something happens, I'll be sure to let you guys know. I might even I'm gonna be camping with one of our younger sisters and her husband. And so I might get her to maybe record it on her phone or something like that, just to see if we maybe capture anything. So I might have an audio clip as well, if anything comes of it. I mean, it's going to be kind of a test run. I still got to test the equipment tonight. We leave out tomorrow. I'm going to test some of the equipment tonight and take it with me over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. I would like to. And if you pick up anything, we can definitely play it on the podcast.
So that'd be just interesting in general, because it's kind of really my... I'm going to like scary places and look for like scary stuff. But I mean, I would consider this to be like my actual like first kind of test run of like a paranormal investigation.
Ooh, that's exciting.
This would be the first time I use actual, you know, equipment or anything like that of that nature.
Yeah. So, I mean, have you tested out at home or anything yet?
I just got done yesterday charging up the speaker for the spirit box. Had its own battery and its charger. Mm-hmm. So I charged it up yesterday. So today I'm probably going to test it out and just mess around with it and the settings and stuff and make sure everything's working properly.
Ooh, I'm excited to see what you find and if you find anything, or maybe something follows you back home.
Oh, ooh. Well, I mean, hopefully that doesn't happen, but
well, I want to talk about this bed and breakfast that's nearby that is said to be haunted by the Lawson family. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor. We're back. I hope you enjoyed that word from our sponsor.
Oh, always good.
So there is the Squire's Inn Bed and Breakfast, which is in Stokes County, and it's said to be haunted by the members of the Lawson family. The owners claim that they have seen 7-year-old Maybelle and the 2-year-old Raymond peering into windows of the front door and have been heard talking, laughing, and playing inside and outside of the house. Mm-hmm. There have been paranormal groups that have went. They haven't picked anything up, but that's something we could think about too, going to a bed and breakfast and seeing what we can find.
Yeah, probably maybe do like a night of camping and then like a night of at the B&B.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'll stay at the bed and breakfast. You camp. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah.
Maybe we could like split up, I'll just, we'll do like one night and you can be in the B&B and do an investigation by yourself and I'll be camping by myself.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great plan.
Uh-huh. I'm sure you like this idea.
There have been documentaries on the Lawson family murders. There's also been songs that's been written about it. A book, White Christmas, Bloody Christmas. That's how I learned about this. I read this book in middle school. It was like a popular book in our library in middle school. Again, we lived super close to where it happened in Stokes County, which is one county over from me. So I checked it out and then I ended up like buying the book. I think I wanted the book and it was just very creepy to me, but also it's hard to understand why somebody would do this. So for me, I would read the book and try to understand why, try to figure out why. There's no way you can, but it's like the human nature of wanting to know why and how could he do this? Why would he do this? This is the same thing with Chris Watts and the Watts family murders. After I watched that documentary, I've been watching videos of surveillance footage that he was on that basically shows him loading the bodies into his truck to take them and dispose of them. One of the videos I saw, there was a shadow and it looked like the little girl, like she was still alive before he left. And he has gave different accounts of what happened that day. Nobody knows exactly what happened. He says that he murdered his wife by choking her to death. And then he smothered the two daughters, loaded them up, took them to where he worked, which was an oil field. It was like really secluded. He buried his wife, his pregnant wife. And then he took his daughters and put them in these oil tanks. There were two of them. So he put them in separate ones. And the hole that he had to put them through was like 8 inches in diameter. So very, like he had to stuff them in there. How could you do that to your family? It's just so mind-boggling to me. I theorize that he had help, but I know I'm going on this. His Shanann, which was his wife that he murdered, her mother went on a talk show, I think it was Dr. Phil, and said that the spirits of Shanann and her two granddaughters and even her grandson, Shanann was pregnant with a boy, came to her to comfort her and tell her they were all together. Shanann apologized to her for, you know, leaving. And then the older daughter, Bella, told her that she could go to Disneyland anytime she wanted. And then they showed her the son. Again, this is her experience. I don't know if it really happened or if it's just something that maybe she dreamed about that makes her feel better. Mm-hmm. But again, it's people that have definitely had unfinished business when they were murdered. So maybe they did visit her mother and, you know, do all these things. Just kind of weird that these family annihilators just, I don't know. I don't understand why they do it. And I really, really try to get to the bottom of it. And I was hoping that maybe with the paranormal investigation, maybe we could get some kind of answers that there's not been, like, you know, questions answered that have gone unanswered. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Or going to bring up possible new theories.
Right. You never know. I think once you open yourself up to that, then, you know, maybe. And, you know, his house is for sale. It's been for sale since the murders happened, which was in 2018. Nobody's buying that house. I wonder how many people go to that house.
Yeah, to look at it.
Yeah.
Quote, unquote.
To observe it. I wonder if there's any way we can contact somebody to see if we could do an investigation in the house.
Because a lot of times, too, like, I mean, like with Annabelle, like, or any instance like this, I always think that if there was any type of paranormal activity that led up to it.
Mm-hmm. In this case, I think he was just a psychopath, a narcissistic psychopath. With Charlie Lawson, I don't know. it doesn't really make sense. The only theory that kind of makes sense is that his daughter was pregnant by him and he just didn't want the shame to be on the family, so he killed all the family. But why didn't he kill the son? Why did he send him away? Again, probably because the son could have stopped him.
Or maybe, I mean, was it him and his son? They're the two that usually go hunting
right
together. Mm-hmm. And that's, I'm assuming this is his firstborn, right? Or was his daughter?
The daughter. The daughter was 17 and the son was 16.
Well, it could also be that, you know, being that it's his first son, maybe him and his son had like a bond and he sent him away in order to save him.
It could be. And to keep the family name going. I mean, men have a weird thing about that.
I mean, because if you think about it, if he's worried about tarnishing the name of the family because he got his daughter pregnant, I mean, wouldn't killing your family and killing yourself tarnish the name as well?
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, what was in his mind? Did he think that he could make it look like a murder? No, that's impossible because he, like, put them in the funeral poses. Mm-hmm. Usually a mass murderer doesn't go back and pose the people he murdered.
Oh, do you know any mass murderers?
I've met a few. No, I don't. But I mean, I've never heard of that happening. I watch these documentaries. I'm obsessed. I'm just curious about why. What goes through these very intriguing people's heads? It makes me wonder, like, how. In the Chris Watts case, how he could go his whole life up until that point as a normal person. People thought of him as being normal. Nobody ever said that dude's a little off. Then he might kill his family one day.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually how it goes. I mean, with like other instances of like criminal activity, people are just, you know, they're normal people. But right. something happens to them that causes them to snap. Or possibly something paranormal affecting them. Causing them to just break down and snap and think down to their core what they're doing is the right thing.
Yeah. I mean, that was the case with the woman that drowned her children, and I'm going to find her name right now. She actually got off on like the insanity plea. And her husband, so there was a lot of, I don't know, drama around this one because she was going through postpartum depression bad. And she had been admitted to a mental hospital. Her name is Andrea Yates. She was admitted to a mental hospital and then her husband got her out against the doctor's orders and they told him she should not be left alone. But he still left her alone with all the kids to work. Yeah. So I don't know if this was like paranormal or if she was just so depressed that she was hallucinating. She was convicted of murder and then the conviction was overturned. She was found not guilty by reason of insanity and she was released from prison and committed to a mental hospital. They were like extremely religious too. So they had five kids. Was it five kids that she? Yeah. Six. No, I'm trying to find out exactly how many kids it was. Five kids. Yes. Five kids that she drowned one after another in the bathtub. She testified that she believed that killing her children would save their souls. Remember I said that the demons were telling her that if she didn't, then they were going to go to hell. And then immediately after she did it, she called 911 and admitted to it. The psychiatrist just taken her off the antipsychotic medication. She was told, her husband was told, don't leave her alone. He left her alone. And then, yeah, I just don't understand how. Again, I'm not in that situation of having that complete mental duress. I have felt like I was about to break, but I didn't think to myself, you know what would make me feel better? Drowning my kids in a bathtub.
Yeah. I mean, that's because that's the, you know, to the extreme.
Right.
Do you know who Ronald I want to say it's DeFeo. Yes.
DeFeo. No, I don't. Is that another one for me to get obsessed with?
Well, that's from the Amityville Horror.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know. I forgot the name.
But I think there's supposed to be like two separate cases where this thing has occurred. Because the one we know from like watching the movies is the man who like, killed his family. He's like wife and his kids.
But this, he was a son, right?
He was a son. He murdered his father, mother, and two brothers and two sisters.
Ooh.
And in his defense, when they tried him, they claimed insanity and that he was acting in self-defense because he heard their voices plotting against him.
Ooh.
So that can kind of lead also to the paranormal as, making him paranoid, affecting him mentally.
Right.
And seeing his own family as a threat to him.
Ooh. Now, I don't know if I want to go and investigate that shit.
Well, Amityville might be a little too much of a hot spot.
A little too much. I don't know. I've heard of all these people that go to investigate certain things and then they're just not quite right afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's a line that I don't think I want to cross. There is the paranormal world of spirits and ghosts and aliens and that type of thing. Okay, I think I'm good with that. But then there's the line of like demonic things and demons and evilness that I don't think I want to get into.
No, I mean, I would go to the Amityville house.
Oh. Okay, well, if you're going to go, then I got to go too.
Yeah, there we go.
I can't be the one at home like reporting from my house.
You just like stay in the doorway of the Amityville house and like not even come in the house. And be like, what's going on now? I'm like, oh, it's spooky in here.
Scream three times if you need me and I'll go call for help.
If you need me, call me and I'll go get someone helpful.
No, I'll do it. But I would assume that is more their ghosts that were murdered there. You know,
well, it had to originate somewhere. If there was something, paranormal that is like affecting them, because what was the story behind the more recent one, or the one that we know, was that something was affecting the husband, and he said like the devil made him do it or something. What was that guy's name?
Oh, I don't know. This has happened a lot though, where they said the devil or a demon makes them do it.
You always hear stories about that too, just in general, like not even full on mass murders, but people who just like murder in general. If they do claim insanity and they talk about how the devil made them do it, or they heard voices, or they saw this person as a threat.
I was listening to an unexplained mysteries. It was about this family that moved into this house and that it was possessed, like the house had demons in it, and they had lots of different people come out to try to like do an exorcism. Her kids ended up getting possessed and she took them to the emergency room because they were acting all erratic and they were thrashing and they were scratching themselves and hurting themselves. So the people at the emergency room saw these injuries and called DSS. So a social worker comes out and sits in the room and starts hearing her son, the woman's son, start saying all these demonic things. And then he crawls up the wall and on the ceiling, like defying gravity in front of this DSS worker. So they take the kids out of the home to protect them. And there's no like DSS checkbox of, okay, demonic behavior, got to take the kids out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the woman lived with her mom. They were both poor and on, a strict budget. They couldn't afford to just move out of the house, but they ended up doing that. They found a way and then they got the kids back. But that right there shows me that there is a possibility of you getting possessed and not being able to control what you do.
And changing the way you perceive things.
Yes.
Because I think that if there is something that can do that, then that's what it does, is it doesn't necessarily just take control of you, but it just changes the way you see things, makes you paranoid. Mm-hmm. I'd also like to hear from our listeners, like, what do you think? Are these people just straight up crazy killers, or do you think that they can have some type of paranormal influence that could cause this?
Right. And I mean, we think about the people that murder their families, just because that is, you know, people that murder strangers, or, you know, in self-defense. Well, I guess in self-defense, it's a different, I see that as, you know, that's the only reason why you should murder somebody is in self-defense, mm-hmm. or you're defending somebody you love. I get those murderers that kill like strangers just to, because they're crazy, right? But somebody mm-hmm. that murders their family, there something has to be wrong with them.
Their loved ones, innocent mm-hmm. children.
Yes.
Oh, not even just innocent children, but just like their own children. You know, right. even that, I mean, it's we can't really grasp that.
No, not at all.
Understand that.
In the Chris Watts case, like, I watched, because Shanann was in like network marketing, so she was sharing stuff all the time on social media, and she was sharing videos of her kids, sharing pictures of them. The oldest daughter, Bella, looked exactly like Chris. Like, that is your child. She looks exactly like you. He even said that she acted just like he did. So you see yourself in this child and you still kill her. I don't know. I mean, even if my child doesn't look like me at all, I couldn't imagine doing what he did. Yeah. But there's just, even whenever you listen to him being interrogated and talking about the kids, I mean, he's not worried at all because he knows what he did. But just talking about them, and he'll even in the interrogation before he admits to it, he says, like, she was this way, like hinting at he did it. And then when he talks about what he was doing, he was saying we. So I think somebody else helped him. But, you know, that's another podcast idea for us, to talk about murders.
Or he could be referring to we as in himself and whatever was influencing him.
That's a possibility too. And maybe this woman that he met that influenced him, maybe she was the devil in disguise. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows where she is now. She cannot be found at all. She's just gone. And people are speculating maybe she's in witness protection. From who? Who is she? Why would they put her in witness protection?
Maybe she doesn't even exist.
She exists. I saw a video of her.
It couldn't be fabricated. You know, technology these days.
But, I mean, again, she just disappears after that. I get it, you know. Maybe she changed her name and her whole look, you know, to try to get away from it all. But even her, the things that she looked up that day that they found out that the wife and daughters were missing before they figured out that they were murdered, she was looking up if Scott Peterson's mistress got a book deal and how much she got for that book deal. You remember Scott Peterson?
Mm-mm.
Oh my gosh, Brooks,
I don't, get I don't with it. The guys.
Scott Peterson, this was, I want to say I was pregnant with Cooper, or it was like a year before I got pregnant with Cooper. He murders his pregnant wife, Lacey Peterson, and he had a mistress on the side, and he took her body and dumped her in the ocean, and she ended up washing up ashore, and the baby had actually came out of her and washed up separately.
Oh.
Yeah. And yeah, he's in prison for the rest of his life too. But he had that mistress. And she came forward. She didn't know that he was married and had, you know, a pregnant wife. But this girl that Chris Watts was seeing knew he was married and knew he had kids and knew his wife was pregnant.
All right, what about this possibility? What if he turned around and murdered his family and then was like, hey, I did this for you. And she was like, oh my God, you're crazy. I'm going to go tell on you. And so he murdered her and hid her away.
Well, the thing is that they interviewed her after he confessed and he was mm-hmm. already in custody. So she's out there somewhere, I think. But even the interview, you have to watch these. You have to watch this Netflix documentary if you're into that kind of thing. If you're into murders. But she is just talking and laughing, and I mean, it just doesn't seem like she cares that he killed his family. You know?
Yeah.
And she lies a lot. She says she didn't know he was married, and then there's text messages and things that prove she went to his house when she wasn't there. Like, you saw all of the stuff of his wife's, like, but there is no, so they had like the Ring doorbell that detects motion and then starts recording. Mm-hmm. So there was a video of Shanann coming home at like 2 o'clock in the morning, the morning that she was murdered, because she was on a business trip and her flight was delayed and she comes home. And that's like the last video of her. But there is no video of this mistress coming in and out of the house. So he had to have deleted it, turned it off, something. They even had like video recordings in the children's room so they could watch them to, you know, make sure the babies were in the bed and the kids weren't getting up in the middle of the night. Again, those were cut off, of course. The only thing he didn't think about was the neighbor's surveillance camera that caught him going back and forth to his truck carrying things that morning. I mean, was he possessed? He does say that he was doing these things, but he wasn't thinking. It was like he was outside of his body as he was doing these things. I'm not trying to say what he did was okay or make excuses for him. He's completely wrong.
Yeah, or like defend him in any way.
No. We just want to figure out why. Again, with the Charlie Lawson case, why? And that's why we want to do some more investigating to see if there were any paranormal activity that we could tap into to get some answers. Or if, you know, the spirits of these murdered victims have anything to say, we want to see. I mean, I would feel good knowing that at least we, you know, investigated it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I'm open to it. The Chris Watts case happened in Colorado, so that's it's kind of far away. But we could definitely hit up Stokes County and see what we hear, feel, see around the area that the murders happened, and at that bed and breakfast. And I've never been to a bed and breakfast, so
I mean, just an experience in itself.
Right. And I want to hear from the listeners. Are there any cases that you've heard about these family annihilators where paranormal influences are thought to have happened? Are there paranormal activity that's happened after it? And, you know, even if this isn't something that you know about or are interested about, let us know if anything has happened to you in the paranormal sense. Ghosts. We had a listener message me and tell me that they had an experience with an owl man. I'm still waiting on some information from them so we can talk more about it. But anything like that, we want to hear from you and we want to get the info. Again, you can not say your name. Like whenever I shared one of our listeners' experiences with alien abduction, he wanted to be anonymous and I kept him anonymous. Or you can share your name and be super famous on #creepy.
And how can they reach us?
They can reach us on Instagram at instagram.com/#creaky. You spell out hashtag. And there is a link in the listen notes of this podcast, wherever you're listening it, that says leave us a voice message. You click that link and you can leave us a voice message and, you know, tell us how to get in contact with you, whether it be social media or email, if we have any questions. You can also reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/creaky podcast. I believe that's all the different ways. Mm-hmm. You can call Brooks on his personal number at no. Just kidding. But yeah, we want to hear from you. Go ahead, Brooks. Sorry.
Like I said before too, with, you know, if also just your points of view. I mean, you let us know if they think like, yeah, I just think these people who murder their families and blame it on like the devil or demonic, you know, influences are just crazy. Or if you feel like, you know, there is some type of influence that changes their perception and makes them do these things, you know, let us know your point of view on that.
Yeah, we want to hear from you. And if there's anything that you have you know, a suggestion that you want us to investigate, let us know that too. We're happy to investigate any type of paranormal, unexplained, alien, demonic, which, I mean, I'm kind of apprehensive about the demonic stuff, but we'll still look into it.
I'll look into it.
Brooks will look into it. Everything yeah. else, I'll look into too. So, yeah, let us know. And we'll scare you next time.